Delighted to have you in the podcast where all stories are welcome and the masks come off. Hello, Neerja ji.
Hello, Shiba. Nice to see you.
Lovely to see you, and so glad that you could make the time to have a soul brew with me over in Coffee and Soul. And what we're going to do is just first raise a cheer together. I have my coffee, and I know that you like to drink your tea, so I'm just going to pour myself a cup of coffee.
That looks nice. I can almost smell the fragrance.
Yeah, that smell is something else.
Mine is masala tea.
Lovely.
To Shiva and to your program.
Thank you.
I've been
so
very
much
intrigued. I don't know what I'm into, but I'm always intrigued by many of the things you've done. So it was enough to have me come on.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Thank you. I know you keep very busy, and I'm so glad that you made the time for this.
Nah, anytime.
Neerja Masi, as you sit with the cup of tea in your hands, can I ask you to just hold it and feel the warmth? And if you can just close your eyes as you hold it. What's the image that comes to your mind?
You know, one of my images, my beautiful images.
Yes.
And I go to it when I have to get something unpleasant done.
Okay. All right.
Like an injection or, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or, you know, submit myself to something and I'll take BP, blood pressure taken.
Yes.
And they say, relax. And the image I have is of a visit to Kashmir, Dal Lake, again 4:30 in the morning, crack of dawn of 5 o'clock, and I was staying in on the Dal Lake, and one of the shikarawalas said, "I'll take you because it's a morning mandi of fruits and vegetables and flowers." So then he. The boat houseboat where I was staying, they gave us a huge pot of kava, which was lovely. And this trip in the morning was so memorable for me.
Right.
I was alone, and he took me around, and all of them on boats having brought their vegetables and fruits and flowers. So it's just one of those beautiful, you know, serene, beautiful, peaceful scenes and tea.
Wow. And what does this do for you? When you think of it, what does it evoke?
It evokes, as I say, peace.
Yeah, as you said.
Exactly. For me.
Yeah.
Tea.
Yes, yes. Yes.
I'm a tea drinker, and tea is a comforter. If my mind is slowed down and I'm working on something, I need to pep myself up, I'll go for a cup of tea. Tea is the ultimate comforter for me.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's one of those images in my mind which I go back to as something beautiful in life and serene in life. That's what it
is. That's very beautiful. And thank you so much for sharing it with me, Neerja Masi. As you reflect on your life, could you share some parts of your journey with me? Some of your highs, your lows, your learnings. Anything that stands out for you and you'd like to share, Neerja ji, it would be lovely.
There are so many...
I know.
That's a difficult question, Shiba.
Some defining moments.
I was always a rebel. From very early on. For instance, I would question even when I was in college, school. you know, why girls had to do certain things and refuse to submit to them. And, you know, I would say, why do women have to cook, for instance? So I never learned cooking.
Yeah.
It's only after, you know, when I had to do it after I got married, and that too, I could do a couple of things because I had watched an aunt. She'd gone out for, I was staying with her, she'd gone out for 15 minutes. And she said, here is bhindi, tum chalati rehna usko. And I thought later, isme to kuch bhi nahi tha. You know, what was the great deal about this? And the bhindi, aur phir dhak dena aur band kar dena. So, but I felt, you know, but then later I thought, food has to be cooked. Somebody has to cook it. So what is, you know, the big deal about it? But anyway, I was a rebel. I did architecture. Then I left it halfway. And there was a group led by Rajmohan Gandhi and moral rearmament at that time. And he talked about changing India, strong, clean, united India. A lot of young people were enthused. And I decided to leave everything and give my whole time to work with them, which I did for 10 years.
How old were you, Nisha ji?
I was what, 18, 19 when I did that?
Wow.
I was studying architecture, as I said, in Delhi and doing well.
I'm sure.
But, you know, at that stage, I didn't want to be another professional. I just wanted, you know, society had to be changed, and I was fired with that.
Yes, yes.
That vision and that idea. Then when I came back to, as I say, back on the conveyor belt, that was not so easy. Yeah. 10 years had passed. And my parents were unwell in Delhi. They needed me. I had been in Bombay. And during the emergency, I was with this weekly called Himmat that had taken on, you know, was fighting against the censorship and the decimation of civil rights and fundamental rights, press censorship and all that period of 75 to 77. I'd been with it, and that was a very exciting period. But when I came back to Delhi, my parents were unwell, so I decided to base here. And then to try and get a job, you know, without a degree. I managed to get it in Press Institute of India. I remember 500 rupees ki naukri thi.
Wow.
And I remember, you know, it was in Sapru House, and you.
Sapru House, my God. Yes. Yeah, yes.
It was located there.
Yeah.
And we were in New Friends Colony, my parents. So, sham ko 5 baje, I would stand out for the bus. And there used to be a mini bus which would come and go take only one direct bus. And if it didn't stop, which happened often, you just had to wait another hour, maybe an hour and a half, or I would walk to the zoo area from where I could get more buses. And at that time, I remember a defining moment when I saw one of my colleagues drive past in a very nice car, and I suddenly hit me, you know, how many years had gone by, you know, what had what one had lost and what one had gained. So anyway, then I
Anita ji, I'm going to stop you here. As you process this, at that time, what you had lost and what you had gained, what were your feelings at that time? How did you deal with it?
It was coping. It was a coping mechanism. At that time, what I had gained because I had left them. Was not so pronounced as what was apparent to me that I'd lost. I didn't have a job. One needed to have money coming into the house. My father had just retired. So all those difficulties, it just meant you just had to continue to cope and continue to be on that tightrope walk without falling. And that has a lot been the story of my life.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
a tightrope walk, which I think a lot of women do. They do multitasking. They have many balls up in the air and they catch them all. And yet not fall off.
Yeah, it's a bit like the walking the razor's edge, isn't it?
So it's later that I began to process, you know, all that I had gained, you know, which shaped my, which formed my personality also. You know, I had got a very deep faith. I'm not religious, but I am spiritual. I believe in an inner steer. I believe in it very much, intuitive, and I follow that even, you know, professionally in everything. I try and follow that. I believe in silence and solitude. I believe in listening to people. I believe in not being judgmental of people, to accept them as they are. Sometimes it becomes foolish also, but, you know. So those are the things that, you know, I learned about India. I learned about our society. So I learned very precious things, working with people. So anyway, that was a process.
Sure. And so after that, what?
After that was getting into a profession, which was the media. And I managed, you know, after this Press Institute, to get a job in the Statesman as a civil rights correspondent. There's only been one civil rights correspondent so far.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And that was a very, very exciting period for me. Those 5.5 years with the Statesman, where I traveled all over the country. Wow. And I wrote about issues that, you know, affected people, bonded labor, child labor, under trials, who'd been in prison without trials and justice for 30, 40 years, and so on. I also filed PILs, public interest litigation, after my stories, and there were landmark judgments. So it was a very productive period for me.
Wow, that is amazing. Neetaji, what is, could you share with us some landmark judgment that followed something that you had written? Because this is so inspiring.
Well, one was on bonded labor. There were people in bondage outskirts of Delhi, Faridabad. And then, you know, they'd come from parts of Madhya Pradesh. And I wrote about it. And then I went to do a follow-up about what had happened. And many of them had gone back into bondage because the rehabilitation had not been done with by the government. And then... I filed the PIL when the judgment came that they must be rehabilitated. And so also in a case of a man who was in prison for 33 years in Muzaffarpur. And again, you know, I filed the PIL, he was released. And this was a really historic judgment, which laid the principle of compensation for the loss of years to his life. It was done by Justice Chandrachud, father of the present judge.
Yes, okay.
In the Supreme Court. Anyway, those were, as I say, very interesting times to make a difference and to do it through the media, which is what I wanted to do.
And you did. And that is amazing.
So I don't know how much one did, but yes, one tried. And then writing about pieces, and it was, good to do that.
And if, you know, you spoke about life being a tightrope walk. And if I was to ask you a metaphor that you live life by, or an adage, what would it be, Neetaji? What's your metaphor for life? You could have a couple. I mean, I'm not saying. You can have three or four.
I tell you one thing that I often think of these days. I think that which has been stayed with me, and I think, as you say, a metaphor maybe. My mother taught me a very important thing. She used one word, and that is Hindi ka shabd hai wo. I can't find an equivalent in English.
नहीं आप हिंदी में ही बोलिए.
उसमें वो कहती थी निभाना है. रिश्ते निभाए जाते हैं. Commitments निभाए जाती हैं. You can go in for something in a high. You go into a relationship in a, on a high. Usually you're in love with somebody and you'll, you may marry or you make a commitment. But wo commitment ko nibhaya jata hai. That is what it's all about. So whether as a professional, whether as a person belonging to society, as a citizen, or as a mother, or as a wife, or as a sister, or as a daughter. For me, that nibhana has been a very important part of my, it's been so ingrained, and I think it came from my mother. It's only now that I think, when I look back and verbalize it and think about those things, these are so such intangible things.
Absolutely.
That stay with you.
Absolutely. This is my goosebump moment, definitely, in this story. It's amazing. It's amazing because as you say it, and the power of what you're saying, and the beauty and the purity of that nibhana, it just says so much about you. And I'm just so delighted that it's that there are people who will be hearing this. If you were to reflect on what you could have done differently, kuch aisa hai, Nija Masi, in life?
See, Shiba, at one level, I was very daring and bold. To give up a very promising career.
Yes.
In architecture, when women were getting into as a profession. And I was in college, I was doing well academically. To give it up like that. It was a very bold move. My parents were against this. Family tried to pursue me. They wouldn't talk to me for a couple of years. There was an estrangement. But in my latter years, I learned through experience that, problems are very multifaceted, very complex. It's not black and white. And that's through those processes, I don't judge people harshly. But sometimes I wonder, in my latter years, I should have done the daring, maybe a little more.
You mean you could have dialed up the daring more than you did? Is that what you...
Yeah, that may be.
What stopped you?
I think, as I say, it's like a house of cards.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that you move one, and the entire edifice may come down because you are balancing so many different things which don't just involve you, which involve other people and their lives and their dreams, and and you're responsible for all that. So therefore, you're not a free agent to say, "Main to ye karne ja rahi hu, to hell with anything else." So one couldn't quite. I couldn't bring myself to.
Though.
One thing that professionally I've just gone, I did everything possible that I could, and I didn't hold back at all. Mm. And as I said, I'm thanks to, my husband, who was very supportive in what I was doing professionally. I was able to do that because I remember when we had Nakula's son, I would come late often, and it was very politically turbulent times when I was bureau chief, heading a team of 14 political correspondents in the Indian Express, and governments were going, coming. It was very, very turbulent. So sometimes I would come home even at 2 o'clock in the morning, or Punjab, you know, when Operation Blue Star took place, I went across. And so Arun would look after Nakul, give the last feed. I would do the early feeds. Arun, you know, hamare ghar mein pani aata tha ek ghante subah aur ek ghante sham ko. And we were a bit think that Nakul's clothes had to be washed under running water. Sabun reh jayega, rash nahi ho jaye, that kind of thing. So I would do the, you know, under the tap washing the nappies in the morning. Arun would do in the evening round. So there was complete, you know, there was support for me to be able to do that. So at one level, yes, I managed to, you know, pursue my profession as I had wanted to, and a very competitive profession, which, you know, took time, travel. Therefore, I, you know, I'm trying to formulate, as you're asking me, where I could have been more daring. But maybe there were moments when, you know, I could have said, break out of, you know, the that structure while keeping the structure alive. But when you're going through it, you're coping.
So
it's not that you look back and say, should I have done that?
So is it some kind of a fear that could have come and stopped that? It's the fear of the crash of the edifice. Is that?
That and fear of the unknown and fear of hurting other people you're responsible for. But it's not even, since you ask me, I'm just wondering whether I would have done. But it's not that it's a great regret or anything.
I see that. I hear that. This is just reflecting deeper to say, maybe. But it's not something that is, as I'm hearing you say, it's not something that is like a compelling thing as a huge regret that you have or anything like that. Not coming across.
Because I did. I've done mostly what I wanted to.
Yes.
In
absolutely.
Life. And of course, it has its ups and downs.
So, a completely different question. What makes you laugh?
What makes me laugh is very, I don't know, some unusual things can make me laugh. I don't know, it's the quirky thing. My son has a very unusual sense of humor. He makes me laugh. He sees the funny things in life. People, you know, people being real about themselves is also very nice too.
Yes.
That I can't pinpoint and tell you this makes me laugh. No,
of course.
Of course. It's not slapstick that makes me laugh.
Yes,
it's much more understated humor. That I go for than the slapstick kind of humor.
It's the, I guess it's life, no? It's seeing something emerging from life itself, which is different, and therefore it brings out a smile and a laugh, and people probably would not even consider that or look at that as funny, but it's something that just kind of says, hey, who would have thought?
That's right. That's the unusual part. Yeah, sometimes somebody will tell me, why are you laughing at it? So it's
So every individual, every individual, Nijaji, has something unique to offer. I believe, like it's a unique lens that nobody else has, and it's your gift to humankind. It's because that unique lens nobody else will wear. Nobody else will look through it. What do you think is your, if I was to say, unique legacy, what do you think it would be?
I don't know, Shiva. That's a very difficult question to answer. It's where, you know, it'll be better for others too, who know you, to be able to say that better than for you yourself to say that. You know, I've done political writing now for a long time, 30 more than 3 decades, maybe more, maybe up nearing almost 4 decades.
Mm-hmm.
And people used to ask me, don't you find it depressing?
Mm.
It's so dismal, the political scene. And I would honestly tell them, no, I find it therapeutic. The idiosyncrasies, the reality of, you know, life, society, how politicians cope, how they navigate, the Lakshman Rekhas, the bitter pills they have to swallow. It's such a kaleidoscope of, you know, richness of life in society, which I've enjoyed enormously my profession because I've written about it. And I can honestly say, Shiba, I really don't judge people. And my friends will often tell me, you know, why are you not taking a harder line? But I'm able to see the other side of the story. I mean, I don't know. It is just me. Even if I take a very sharp line, I'm able to see the other side of the story. Maybe it's my early training. I don't know what it is to see two sides. My early journalistic training. You know, which was to cover a student strike in Bombay for Himmat Weekly, with which I worked at that time. And I remember the management had a view, the students had a view, and then I would go back to the management, and you know, what is the answer to this? And I found nobody gives you the whole picture. They give you a selective picture. And the picture can only be completed, that there are so many shades to a picture.
Yeah.
And that it's not so easy to judge, you know. If somebody tells you something, that is the truth, that's only one facet of the truth. Where people are coming from, why they are behaving in a particular way. So maybe, I don't know, this is my legacy or not, but this is something, and I like my work to be people-oriented. About people, write about people. So, but it's not a legacy. This is like rambling.
It's
a rambling answer to your question.
No, I don't know what it is, that, Nijaji, because what I'm hearing you say is, and I'm just trying to try and say it out, what I'm hearing is that this is about all the colors of life and being able to work with the sub-colors and the, you know, the nuances and the shades that are obviously don't appear, but the shades are there, and being able to pick that up and celebrate even that and have a space for that. I think that is tremendous, because that really is, and that is truly not judgmental, because it's being able to pick up those things which can be brushed aside, right? I mean, a blue is a blue. But there is so much in that blue turning to green, and all those subtle shifts. And I think just, this is what I'm hearing. This is what the image that comes to my mind when you talk about the what you just said about the richness of understanding what goes on in these circles in terms of the politicians, and not just it's just the vagaries. And being able to work with that and accept that and, you know, present that. I think that is amazing.
And well, I don't know whether amazing or not.
No, it really is.
But it's been interesting.
Yes, it's so unique and so different. If you were to say something to, and if it was like a key, some message that you'd like to give out there, either to women of today or to people at large about life, from looking at life from where you're standing, and perhaps to people who are beginning or who are just in the middle of it all, what would you say?
I would say follow your heart, irrespective.
Irrespective.
Not always easy to do. And as you have to, you know, navigate, negotiate, well, that's there. Follow your inner steers, which are very powerful for each one of us, and our goals come from there. Each one of us is passionate about something. That's the goal. The way to do it is to follow your heart. Then advice is not, Shiba, very, you know, good thing because to do.
I would request you not to underplay this. You never know how many people you could inspire and will inspire by this. So I would say that, and I would request, is that after you say these things, don't step back from it because it's so powerful. And I keep silent.
Look, I'm not. I believe in everything I'm saying.
Yes, exactly.
I'm not stepping back. But each one has to find their own.
Sure.
Their own journey. But I know what has anchored me.
Yes.
Through thick and thin is really following my heart and the inner leads that I get.
It's amazing.
And the inner reserves that I can tap into. So if I have to say, as I say, advice is, you know, not people don't like, but if I had to say something, I would say this.
Thank you so much, Neeja ji. It's really been very inspiring speaking with you and hearing your reflections, your thoughts, your life a little bit. You know, there's so much still there. I know that perhaps, but you know, just to be able to get a little bit of a glimpse of who you are, what you've done, what you bring, it's been an honor. And thank you for sharing that space with me.
Thank you, Shiba, for asking me. It's been marvelous to chat with you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you very much. And I hope you continue to enjoy your tea. Thank you for your time and attention and for being a part of Soul Brews with Shiba. Until next week, keep the coffee swirling.